only 35% of SDG targets with available data are on track or show moderate progress. Part of the reason is that we face an annual SDG financing gap of $4 trillion. So with dwindling ODA, declining foreign direct investment, and the burdens of debt, countries face a fiscal crisis that is unlikely to abate significantly by 2030.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Multilateralism Unpacked, the podcast of the United Nations University Center for Policy Research. I'm Jack Durrell, Head of Communications at UNU CPR. The Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, were launched 10 years ago. They were introduced as a broader, more comprehensive alternative to the Millennium Development Goals they replaced, encompassing 17 interconnected goals and addressing a wider range of economic, social, and environmental issues. But their implementation over the past decade has been uneven, and evidence suggests we are unlikely to achieve the goals by the 2030 deadline. With 5 years to go, time is quickly running out. And to make matters worse, we are facing a funding gap of between $4.2 and $5 trillion per year. How we can fill this gap and secure the sustainable future that the SDGs promised was addressed at two UN events in July. The first was the once-in-a-decade Fourth International Financing for Development Conference, or FFD4, held in Seville, Spain. The second was the High Level Political Forum, HLPF, here in New York, an annual review that monitors implementation of the 2030 agenda. To help us understand what happened at these events, the decisions made, the pathways identified, and any future implications, I spoke to Dr. Nicole Goldin, head of UNU CPR's Equitable Development Research Pillar, who was present in both Seville and in New York. Our conversation explored the reasons we are falling behind on the SDGs, what we must now do to accelerate their implementation, the solutions shared at FFD4 and HLPF, and what comes next for the SDG agenda. Here's our conversation. It's common knowledge that we are falling behind with regards to implementation of the SDGs, and many argue that it's highly unlikely we'll be able to achieve the SDGs before the 2030 deadline. How do you account for this lack of progress?
Thanks, Jack. First, let me say it's great to be with you again. And indeed, we are way off course in meeting the goals, and the majority will not be met by 2030. The latest report on the SDGs released during the HLPF says that only 35% of SDG targets with available data are on track or show moderate progress. Part of the reason is that we face an annual SDG financing gap of $4 trillion. So with dwindling ODA, declining foreign direct investment, and the burdens of debt and associated debt service payments, countries face a fiscal crisis that is unlikely to abate significantly by 2030. This means they can't spend on health or education, infrastructure, and other kinds of things that really are needed to achieve the SDGs. The richest 40% of countries have public spending rates out of about 40% of budgets, including an average of 13% on social protections. That's compared to just 1.5% among the poorest 40% of countries. So that just gives another indication of some of the challenges. But it's not only the financing issue. Compounding that, we really should remind ourselves that COVID reversed many of the development gains we'd been seeing, especially in education and poverty alleviation. Climate change brings increased weather events, vulnerabilities, health and economic impact, and conflict and fragility furthers corruption, undermines governance and institutions, disrupts education and the economy, drives food insecurity, and can also have adverse health effects. Nearly half the world's people living in acute poverty are in fragile or conflict-affected countries. So on top of all this, just from a macro perspective, there are also political economy challenges that undermine political will. Global geopolitical tension threatens development cooperation and multilateralism itself that are really needed to deliver on collective ambition, solidarity, and support lower middle income countries in achieving the goals. And in many countries and member states themselves, the domestic political environment is resulting in policies that support the few over the many and that foment rather than reduce inequalities. And the last thing I'd say on this is that finally, some have said the agenda itself is just too wieldy. 17 goals, 169 targets, 230 indicators is just bringing too much fragmentation and undermining achievement.
With 5 years remaining to achieve the SDGs, what do you think the multilateral system can do to accelerate implementation of the 2030 agenda? And specifically, what were the solutions proposed at FFD4 in Sevilla and also HLPF here in New York?
So as we just said, the challenges are many, so there's clearly no easy or quick fix, and 5 years is not a lot of time, does require urgent action. It's really about, in many ways, accelerating domestic revenue mobilization, including the alleviation of debt, bringing down the cost of capital, and increasing external financing and investment to create that fiscal space for investment. But it's also about better using data to pinpoint needs and target investments, but also to identify opportunities for better integration, as well as for safe and equitable digital solutions. The application of technology, whether that's good old-fashioned mobile solutions or the internet-oriented solutions, but also artificial intelligence, blockchain, these can really help expand reach and scale of investments and implementation. And this is what we heard or saw or seeing in both the HLPF and FFD processes. In Sevilla, the official program and the more than 450 side events that we were dashing to in between, the discussions were both encouraging, but also candid and critical of areas where we're falling short and need to step up, including the more tangible reforms of the international financial architecture. And some have been arguing there's an over-reliance on the private sector. So we really need to think about concrete activities in those areas. One of the things that FFD4 in its outcome document did was to establish a borrowers forum to give more voice and ostensibly potentially quote bargaining power to sovereign debtor countries. And that's a welcome step by many. But also encouraging out of Sevilla is the Sevilla Platform for Action, or the SPA for short, that was really developed to support implementation. It's a wide-ranging collection of over 130 commitments, concrete initiatives, ranging from global public investment and integrated national finance frameworks to prearranged financing platforms, local currency lending, and debt swaps. So all of which meant to really help advance implementation of the SDGs and financing with real concrete solutions. The HLPF, on the other hand, shared and spotlighted best practices in country-led implementation, because while, as you said, there's a lot that we need to do multilaterally, a lot of SDG impact will really happen at the country level. And the HLPS also called for an identified action in key areas that are believed to be almost multipliers, where intensified efforts could deliver more transformative impact. So this, for example, includes jobs and social protection, which has really been a big focus. Education, energy access, food systems, climate, biodiversity action, and as I mentioned, digital solutions. So a number of interagency accelerators in these areas were launched. So there's promising initiatives and momentum coming out of these processes, but clearly a lot still needs to happen.
The United States, the largest bilateral funder of overseas development assistance, pulled out early from the FFD4 negotiations. It's also continued to decrease its foreign aid budgets and last month rejected the HLPF ministerial declaration. From your experience speaking to attendees of both FFD4 and HLPF, are there concerns that US disengagement might now endanger the 2030 agenda?
I think certainly there is concern over the U.S. dismantling of its aid infrastructure and the cutting of assistance, especially as though they may be the largest. They are certainly not alone in these moves. You and I discussed this in an earlier episode of this podcast. And so there are concerns of what bilateral funding cuts mean to the agenda, as we just talked about. But in terms of process and diplomacy, it could also encourage or provoke countries to work around or work without the U.S. So take FFD, for example. As you mentioned, the U.S. withdrew from the process altogether at the final preparatory committee in June. And this allowed other member states to forge ahead nearly unanimously to endorse in advance an outcome document, the Compromiso, that included important elements that the U.S. was opposed to during the negotiations. So, for example, elements around gender, climate, sustainability, or references to the 2030 agenda itself.
In your opinion, has the U.S. withdrawal opened up space for others to take the lead?
Yes, U.S. absence ultimately is creating space for others to lead. And while the U.S. rejected the HLPF statement, as you mentioned, for example, 35 countries presented their voluntary national reviews. So we are seeing the willingness and the readiness of diverse member states to sustain, if not amplify, their engagement and with it their resources to some extent. China, Germany, for example, as well as the EU as a bloc, Spain as the host of the Financing for Development Conference, as well as regional institutions, including the regional development banks. And of course, within and across institutions and member states from within the global South, we're seeing that fostering and enabling South-South or triangular cooperation. This was very prominent in the Sevilla agenda, as well as at HLPF, features robustly in the Compromiso, as well as in the outcome document and the ministerial document from HLPF, with concrete pledges from member states, whether that's to regional financing mechanisms that facilitate cross-border investment, resource mobilization, and knowledge sharing, again, particularly among developing countries, is really, I think, going to be critical to fill a void or gap that may be left.
So what's next for the FFD4 and HLPF processes, and also the SDG agenda moving forward?
So formally monitoring and substantive dialogue will continue through the annual processes. So for FFD4, that's the ECOSOC forum held in the spring, usually the week following the IMF World Bank meetings, but both of these also feed into, or you could say are fed by, other annual processes such as the COP, which we know is upcoming, the Commission on the Status of Women, the Commission on Social Development, as well as the negotiations around, for example, the UN Tax Convention and the upcoming Second World Social Summit on Development in December. As far as the SDG agenda at large, the Patch for the Future designated the 2027 HLPF as the official launch point for the intergovernmental negotiations of the follow-on framework, but informal and unofficial debate and thinking have certainly already begun.
And finally, how do financing and achieving the SDGs factor into CPR's research agenda?
The SDGs are really an important baseline, especially to our equitable development agenda, which we're building out in two main policy streams. One is about reducing inequality in achieving SDGs between countries. So that's everything we've just been talking about in terms of economic development cooperation, international financial architecture, the financing and governance agenda. So how can our policy, research, and innovation support that? But it's also about reducing inequality in development outcomes within member states and among different people and communities. This may take a gender, a geographic, or a generational orientation. So the SDGs are part and parcel of all of that. During the HLPF, we co-hosted a side event with Keio University on Beyond SDGs and are continuing our thinking and insights on the future framework as part of our equitable development agenda. But it's also important to note that there is a really strong tie between the SDGs and the Pact for the Future, the Future Generations Declaration, and the Global Digital Compact, as well as to the peace and security agenda of the United Nations at large. I'd say both the HLPF and the FFD in Sevilla push the peace for development necessity, if you will, and vice versa. So at CPR, we're pursuing policy, research, and innovation related to foresight, technology for development, and conflict economies for example, that's crossing all of our pillars and really bringing the synergies of our research and our expertise in ways that can better advance and support SDG implementation.
So that was Nicole Golding, Head of Equitable Development at UNUCPR. Nicole and her team will be focusing on the post-2030 agenda later this year and will be sure to check on progress. Thank you for listening.